classes of many different topics. I want to hone in on one, but also on the side, connect this point to a few others. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, the end of the pasuk, the way we're all familiar with that opening is Lemur. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, Lemur. However, here there are two added words. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, Behar Sinai, Lemur. Hashem spoke to Moshe on Har Sinai. Is this a chiddush? Is that something new that we were expecting, we weren't expecting? Turns out, they were encamped at Har Sinai the entire time. From Yisro, where we got the Torah, they've been there ever since. Just there's one thing to keep in mind. The end of Shemos, we have a Mishkan. At the point when a Mishkan exists, we get our commandments from the Olam Moed in the Mishkan. Moshe enters the Mishkan, gets commandments, and he walks out and tells us Bnei Yisrael. All of a sudden, at the very end of Vayikra, we have a comeback. Moshe, could you come back up onto Har Sinai? I have another mitzvah for you. Bahar is essentially the last set of halachot in Vayikra. That's it. Next parsha is the treaty of Torah. Do you accept Torah? Do you not accept Torah? If you accept, you get blessing. You don't accept, you get curses. This is the end. The end is Parshas Bahar, which is Shemitah and Yovel. The 7th year and the 50th year in the cycles, which we'll understand in a moment. That, Moshe, come back up on Har Sinai. What's going on Har Sinai? There's a movie that was basically entitled, "What Has That Got to Do with the Price of Rice in China?" It's price of tea in China, right? Well, it's a famous phrase. Right? What's it got to do with the price of tea in China? Meaning, what does it have to do with anything? The original phrase is, from Rashi over here, Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. That's the Jewish way to say it. What does Shemitah have to do with Har Sinai? And they actually, when they translated the movie into English, into Hebrew, in Israel, it turned into Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. That was the headline for the movie. Yeah. It's hilarious. There are a lot of hilarious Israeli phrases. For example, my favorite is Moshe Bateva. What's Moshe Bateva? Pigs and blankets, right? The Frankfurter in dough in Israel is called Moshe Bateva. Funny. It's a Jewish country. What does Shemitah have to do? What's going on at Har Sinai that Shemitah has to be taught to us on Har Sinai? Question number two. What is Shemitah? What is gained by taking a year off? So a lot of people suggest it's a year to work on rest. Soul searching. Everyone should take a year off. You could learn Musar, learn Torah. It's wonderful. That's really a very beautiful idea for the farmers. I understand there were more farmers in the olden days than there are today. There were always wood choppers and wax makers and shoemakers and loads of other jobs. It wasn't every single person a farmer. If the Torah wanted every single person to take a sabbatical, it would say, one every 7 years, everyone's going to take a sabbatical and the government will support us all. That's what it would say. But it doesn't say that. It says the land gets its rest. And if I read to you the psukim, you will see there's an overemphasis on the land gets its rest, the land gets its rest, and the land better get its rest. And if it doesn't, the land will take a vengeance against those that didn't let it rest, because the land wants to rest. So maybe there are those that say it's about bitachon, trust in God. You let the land rest, don't plant and see how you get food. The answer today is import. But if you don't, that doesn't fit again with the overemphasis on the word, the land getting rest. Every single pasuk. If you go through it from the beginning, Perek Chafei, go through the pasukim, you'll see. The land needs its rest. So much so that the early Tanoim and Amoraim, they would buy out land in Eretz Yisrael, they would buy out property from non-Jews to make sure the land can have its rest. The land gets its rest. You have to buy it from them. Today we do the exact opposite. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. We do the exact opposite. We sell it to the non-Jews so that way it won't get its rest. What is this idea? Why does land need to rest? Why would land? What, the land needs, your soda machine needs to rest? Your shoes need to rest? They fall apart, so I buy new ones. But the shoe doesn't need rest. My computer every now and then needs rest. Definitely every now and then. It just tells me. That's it. I'm freezing. I'm going to forget every single thing you programmed into me. And it just does strange things. Okay, so I've learned the hard way. Computers, you have to just sometimes bang them around, then shut them off and restart. Good as new. And sometimes you just buy new ones. Rabosai, I think the idea is there's one entity that never gets rest. A slave. A slave never ever gets to rest. Comes the Torah. And you know, you could program land. In Israel, it's really remarkable. More than in any other country. There are drippers. They figured out how to preserve water because water is so precious here. So what they did was they took a hose with drippers, and each dripper you put exactly where the roots are. It doesn't spray like those American sprinklers. Doesn't do that and wastes all the water. 90% of the water just evaporates and only 10% go to the roots. But it's direct to the roots, exactly where you want it. You could figure out every single plant to get the largest fruit or vegetable in this area. I need this kind of soil, this kind of food, this amount of water daily, twice a day. They figured out how to maximize. They grow things in trailers here. In some parts of Israel, they grow things in like layers. One layer to just put enough, grow lamps, and it's like cubbies. And they're growing cucumbers, tomatoes, lettuce like this, and you could figure out exactly how many drips, when, perfect. It's a science experiment. It's a vending machine. I put my coin in, press the button, I get my soda. I put the plant in, I drip, I could do 1 liter every half hour, 3 liters, 4 liters. You could even change the amount of liters per dripper, so I could have 1 liter going to this vegetable and 4 liters going to this tree in the same hose. It's a very cool system. A very simple system and a very cool system. System, I've programmed everything scientifically. I've worked it all out, and it's my push-button machine. It's automatic. It's a sense of entitlement. I own it. I rule. I'm a human that now rules. Comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, you don't own Israel. It's not your slave. Don't work it to the end. It's not your slave. Very simple point. It gets its rest. Rav Kook pointed out beautifully in one of his Shalashodas drushes. So many people take great issue in Maseches Kiddushin Daf Beis Amud Aleph that the way to marry a woman is learned from the purchase of a piece of property of land. How dare the Torah and Chazal equate women, marriage to a woman, with the purchase of land. And Rav Kook pointed out that it's all upside down. You've misunderstood. You don't buy a woman. You buy not the land and not the woman. You marry Eretz Yisrael. We're not talking about any land. You learn it from the acquisition Avram made with Marissa Machpelah. Because you don't buy Eretz Yisrael, you marry Eretz Yisrael. Marriage means relationship. She's not your slave. You don't own your wife. There is a commitment, one to the other. That's the way it is with Eretz Yisrael. We're married to the land. The land gets its rest. The Torah continues with Shemitas Ksafin, your money! Your money! If I lent money and the year of Shemitah comes, it cancels the loan. He doesn't owe me the money anymore. If I sold land and Yovel arrives, I get the land back. If someone, a Jew, a friend of mine, sold himself, I'm obligated to ransom him, redeem him. And in case we can't, if I, in the event that I do ransom him, He's going to go free, certainly at Yovel. And if I don't ransom him, a huge punishment is on my head. What's going on? We don't own our things. And I want to make it clear with a few stories so I could really demonstrate this point. Just to understand a little bit of background knowledge before we get to the stories. I was watching a debate between an atheist and a rabbi. And the atheist pointed out to the rabbi, tell me one thing religion accomplishes that it offers you that being an atheist, I can't do. Give me one thing you can do that I can't do. So I was like raising my hand. Let me answer. It's just that I was on the other side of the computer screen, so I couldn't get in there. And I just wanted to say, tell this fella. Now, you have to understand, this guy was basically a good old-fashioned Viking ogre. He was rude. He lost civility somewhere, I guess, in the 1200s. He was just a rude and crude individual. He had no manners, no problem casting insults that were just at the person, as opposed to anything the person was saying, cutting him off left and right, refused to look at him, could not make eye contact. He was just a rude individual. So I wanted to say, there's one thing he cannot ever be, and that is he can never be humbled by a greater being. It can never happen. He'll never learn that message. He never has to learn that message. Maybe someone who's a greater thinker than he will come his way and he'll realize, oh, I misspoke. I should correct my ways. But internally, he never ever has to learn that message. There is no one greater than me. I don't have to be kind to another person. I don't have to care about other people. No one's above me to tell me otherwise. Listen to this vart that Rav Soloveitchik said. Every single bruch in Shmon Esrei, we have a request. God, bring us refuah. God, bring us ge'ula. God, give us slicha and kapar, tshuva. Whatever the request is, we have a because statement. Not every bracha, but many brachos, there's a because statement. Give us tshuva because you're the one that controls it. Give us slicha because ki kelmelech v'saleachata. You're the one that controls slicha and mechila. Give us refuah ki kelmelech rofei neman. You're the one that controls refuah, health. All the brachos, first there's a request, and then we point out you're the one that controls it. But there's one exception to this. And that is the first of the request brachos. Atah chonein l'adam das. You're the one in control over knowledge. Chaneinu me'etcha, and give us some of that knowledge. Why is it, Rav Soloveitchik asked, that the Chazal, in writing Shmon Esrei, they flipped the order. You are the source of knowledge? Please give us some. All the others, please give us health, please give us tshuva, please give us ge'ula. Why? Because you're the one. The because statement, that you're the source of it, comes afterwards. And Rav Soloveitchik said so beautifully. Because all the others, at the end of the day, you could fool yourself for a long time in life, but you'll realize health at the end of the day is in God's hands. You could go your whole life thinking money is all yours, but you'll realize you'll be humbled at times in your life, and you'll realize it's not really fully in your hands. Everything in life, you'll realize at the end of the day, someone else is in control, with one exception. And you could go your entire life thinking, it's all me. And that is what you think in your mind. Your das. Your knowledge. Come Chazal, and they start the bruch of das. Atachonim l'adam das. You're the one that gives das. And we would really like some. We do not own Eretz Yisrael. We don't own each other. We don't own our money. We don't own. We borrow. It's on loan from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with that, I'll give you two stories. One, an incredible story brought down in a sefer called Sefer Shevet Musar. In the Sefer Shevet Musar by Rabbeinu Eliyahu HaKohen, it's good to look in the story, the introductory story of the sefer. Okay, I'm not going to get sidetracked on a story about a story I'm going to tell. Look it up on your own or ask me later. It's a beautiful, beautiful story about the sefer if you've never heard of it. Sefer Shevet Musar. And in this sefer, in the first parak, the second parak, I don't remember anymore, middle of the page, the following story takes place. A man is in the field. And he's working and working, and Eliyahu HaNavi all of a sudden comes to him and says, Shalom, my name is Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi, wow, I'm Joe. Can I help you? And he says, yeah. I've come with a briefcase, a few million dollars, and it's yours. It's yours. But there's a decision. You can have it now, or in 7 years. What'll it be? Do you want it now? I've come here from heaven to give you $1 million now or in 7 years. What would you like? So the man's confused. Wow, what a question. This is before the days of Hollywood. So the man says to Eliyahu HaNavi, wait, right here. I don't make the big decisions in my life. My wife does. You wait here. I'm going to go ask her. So he runs home and he says, dear, what do we do? And she's like, about what? About Eliyahu HaNavi. Well, where is he? He's in the field. You left Eliyahu HaNavi in the field? Yes. And this is the deal now or in 7 years. She's like, you left Eliyahu HaNavi in the field to ask me now or in 7 years. Now! Who knows what's going to be in 7 years? Maybe he won't come back. Now, go tell him we want to know. But, the woman said to her husband, I don't know what the nature of this money is. It came from heaven as a gift. Every single penny we use, we're going to write down in a notebook of all the mitzvos that we enabled, that we used, we're able to do with this money. Goes back to Eliyahu HaNavi, says, we'd like the money now. Gives it to him. Congratulations. Enjoy. 7 years later, the man's working in the field, and lo and behold, Eliyahu HaNavi comes back. Says, hi, Joe, it's me. Remember me? Hey, you got more money for me? Well, actually, on that topic, I'm here to take the money back. Whoa. You didn't tell me that. But you know what? Just like I didn't take the money without my wife, you're not getting it back without my wife. He runs home, leaves Eliyahu HaNavi in the field again. Dear, we've got Eliyahu HaNavi. Oh, that's great. Get more money. No. He wants the money back. And she says to him, I knew that would happen. Bring Eliyahu HaNavi the notebook. Take the notebook, bring it to Eliyahu HaNavi and say, Eliyahu, here's the notebook. If we misuse the money, we will get it back to you. We'll owe it to you. It's yours. But otherwise, go through the notebook and see what we've done with it. This is what we did with your money. He goes, brings the notebook back to Eliyahu. Looks at it. Zachitem atem. The story ends. You merit to have the money to keep it. And this is a mashal. Everything is on loan. It's not just about money that comes, drops out of heaven. We're talking about every single thing we have. As the Sefer Shevet Musar continues, the idea, our eyesight, our hands, our legs, it's all on loan. One more story. Rav Nachman Kahana, Rav Meir Kahana's brother, tremendous activist, is the rabbi of the Young Israel in the Muslim Quarter. Phenomenal speaker, an advocate for Israel. And Rav Nachman Kahana was... They dance from the Young Israel in the Muslim Quarter to the Green Doors in the Muslim Quarter, right in front of Har HaBayit on Simchas Torah in the fourth Hakafa, and then they dance to the Kotel. So I went with them 1 year, and loads of journalists come to film the protests against the Arabs. That's how they write it up. It's a protest against Arabs, how we want to throw the Arabs out from the Muslim quarter. A nice spin on what this is, dancing with the Torah to the green doors. Okay, that's their spin on it. And one of the news reporters got a little shoved here and there, and he goes up to Rav Nachman Kahn and he says, "Rabbi, your people are shoving me and pushing me." Rav Nachman Kahn said, "Well, I'll tell you the truth, mister." He knows the guy. He has a long history with the fella. And he said, "Listen, I'll tell you the truth. It's our Simchas Torah, and you're honestly getting in the way. So if you get in the way of a dancing circle, you might get hit. It's a dangerous endeavor. But especially because you're here in order to throw a spin on it, our people actually think you're a big anti-Semite." So this news reporter, he said back to Rav Kahana, he said, "I am not an anti-Semite." So Rav Kahana said, "You know, my friend, life is like a shopping cart in a supermarket. You go into the supermarket and you roll your wagon around and you could fill it with all sorts of things. As a teenager, let's say when I went to college, and I had my own money to spend on my own food. So you go to the supermarket, it's an amazing experience. Honeycombs, alphabets, devil dogs, hot dogs, Moshe Bateva, right? Loads of good, nutritious food. I got all the protein, vegetable oil, got my vegetables, and I got everything in there." At the end of the day, Rav Kahana says, "You're going to go to the cashier, and she's going to see every single item, one by one, ring up every single one of the shtuyot that you put in your wagon. And life is like that shopping cart. You could fill it with whatever you want. When you go to heaven, they're going to ring up every single act and deed and speech of yours, one by one. And there they don't take credit." And the man just reiterated his earlier statement, "Rabbi, I'm not an anti-Semite. I just tell news the way it is." Of course he does. I have a friend in Ramat Beit Shemesh. When he bought a freezer, he wanted another freezer. There wasn't enough space. So he went ahead, bought a big freezer. But he said, "I only needed really another little shelf, a single shelf for the excess that didn't fit in the freezer that came with our fridge. What do I do with all the other space? It came from Hashem. Hashem granted me the opportunity to own a big freezer." So he opened the soup gemach, and he announced it in the whole tzibur, "Bring soup any point during the week, I'll give it out to the poor." And he opened the big soup gemach. In the end, he didn't have enough room for the soup gemach in just that freezer. He had to buy another freezer. Why? Because it's not mine. My money is not mine. I'm a broker. Sometimes I give tzedakah to people. They're like, "Where do you have? I don't want to take money from you, Harav." I was like, don't worry. It's not from me. It's an international fund. What's the international fund? I have a bank account here and I have a bank account in America. That's the international fund that I have. God enables me to be the broker over his money. 10%, it's not mine. That's what it means. Har Sinai. This is the end of Sefer Kedusha. Sefer Kedusha, the Sefer of Holiness, you have to know something. God goes up on top of the mountain, and we, at the lowly level, at the foot of the mountain, we are humbled. There's someone up above that calls down and says, "Humans, I empower you. I choose you. You are grand, but don't let it get to your head. Don't get haughty. I'm above you. I own the land. I own the money. I own. Don't take it for granted. Your money is to be given. Your bodies are to be used for mitzvos, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be godly. When no one's looking and when everyone's looking, I'm the one who owns. The word melech is king. Moach, lev, kaved. The Lubavitcher Rebbe had this part. The exact opposite of melech, flip the letters, is curse. Kalem, vayikalem, is curse. Kaved, lev, moach. If you first acknowledge the Ribbono Shel in your brain, the moach, then you put it in your heart and then you act that way. That's melech, recognizing the malchut of Hashem. If you start with the kaved, your materialism, what's good for me, and then it builds up to make it an emotional goodness, and then I will intellectualize it, put it in my brain, that's curse. You've just created your own reality. It's an illusion. And I will end with an incredible idea that Rav Gold, Rabbi Shalom Gold, said just this past week. On Shabbat, there were two bar mitzvahs in town, all related to the yeshiva. Daphne Goldreich, our secretary, our office manager, she has a son, Shai, who hit bar mitzvah. And all of us were Rav Boz's son's bar mitzvah, Elnatan's bar mitzvah. So we didn't even know about Shai's bar mitzvah. Her father, Rav Shalom Gold, is a phenomenal speaker, phenomenal individual, big Talmud Chacham. And he spoke at the bar mitzvah for his grandson. And he said, he noted an article, remarkable article. Worldwide, there's been a decline in birth. The birth rate is down worldwide. Basically, with the exception of Israel. In Israel, the birth rate is still climbing. The average non-religious individual in Tel Aviv has 3-4 kids. Chilonim have 3-4 kids. In America, the average is 1 and a dog, or 3 dogs. But people, it's down. The numbers are down. So, some surveys started to be taken worldwide in Sweden and Norway and England and France and Germany and Russia and America and Canada. Why are the numbers down? Why are they shrinking? And the average, the most common answer in the United States as to why people do not want children. This wasn't a Jewish question because of the cost of Jewish education. It's not that. It was because self-actualization. I need to find myself. And too many kids, it really holds me back. It hinders me from finding myself. I need to have self-actualization. Well, in Israel, they did a survey as well. They went to Haifa, Tel Aviv, Eilat, non-religious places. And they wanted to understand, why is it that you guys have, on average, more kids than the rest of the world? And the Israelis answered, self-actualization. The same exact answer. I wanted to find myself. Our expression of self-actualization is through doing good things, is through our children, is through devotion to others. That's a Jewish concept. They keep all the mitzvot, they keep some of the mitzvot, they keep none of the mitzvot. But some of the Judaism has sunken in and become internalized. They have grasped this principle that we, as the Jewish people, we devote ourselves to others. We devote ourselves to a sense of meaning, of belonging, of doing. And therefore, as this parsha comes close to the end of Vayikra, with just one more parsha left, the treaty, we end with the message on Har Sinai. God on top. My beings, my human beings, I am above, you're below. We're humbled. And we think and take into consideration, what have I done with my eyes as a mitzvah? What have I done with my hands for a mitzvah? Am I pushing myself for mitzvot? Am I filling up my basket with wonderful deeds? Because that is the Jewish approach. Let's become Anshei Kadosh. in this world of Kedusha.